This is Shine On, the Health and Happiness Show, with new episodes every week on how to live well. Shine On is heard all over the world as a podcast, but it's heard first on the radio in New York's Hudson Valley.
Hi, it's Casey. Thank you so much for tuning in to Shine On. It is April. That is Autism Acceptance Month. It used to be Autism Awareness Month, but so much has changed for the good. Eliza Bozinski is here from the Anderson Center for Autism. Did I say the name correctly?
You said everything correctly. Beautifully done, Casey.
For Autism. Eliza Bozinski, that just comes out of my mouth so easily now because we've been together for years and years. Eliza, Acceptance Month versus Awareness Month. Tell us the whole backstory of how this beautiful thing came to be.
My pleasure. So thanks for having me on. And I love telling the story because I think it is a really big milestone and a tribute and a testament to all of the people who have worked so tirelessly for so many decades, really, around initially autism acceptance. Because if you think back to even, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, I mean, we hear from parents to this day say there was nothing. There were no services. Doctors didn't know what to do. There was, we didn't know where to turn, combined with huge amounts of stigma and lack of understanding and awareness from your general community, from your schools, from your neighbors, from your, you know, local grocers. I mean, like just such an feeling of isolation. And then on top of that, I think a really inaccurate idea that floated around the community, probably way more so than we would like to think, that it was somehow mom's fault, dad's fault, that there was blame being placed at families, whether it was, you know, biological or something you were doing or not doing enough of at home, really led to a very negative connotation, I think, for families raising children with autism for a very long time. So the awareness work was huge, right? You can't really shift a culture's view of something or society's take on something or even compel people to take action if they don't have any understanding that it exists, what it is, what it looks like, how many people it affects. So the real, I think the main players in the awareness piece were honestly parents, siblings, grandparents, caregivers. It spread out to educators, professionals, doctors. But those folks, you know, if you think about it from this perspective, it goes back so long that they were doing that work to change a culture and to make an impact that would probably not really fully be seen until their child was either an adult or maybe even was never going to benefit from that change in society. So that's what always touches me, is that these were people saying, this isn't going to change today for my child, but it's important because I know there's more families coming up behind me who are going to need this. So awareness, you can't have acceptance if you don't have awareness. So it's really still, I would say, Autism Awareness Month, but it's Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month, in the hopes that we eventually get to, you know, a real embracing and a recognition and appreciation for all of the attributes of autistic and neurodivergent people. So it's great to be here in April, which is Acceptance Month. Things are changing in terms of, you know, we're seeing a lot more employers being interested in hiring people with autism. We're seeing a lot more programs, not just in the elementary and middle and high school ages, but also in universities and colleges and vocational schools. So that I think is a big change related to first the awareness and now the acceptance and the understanding that we are all a community, we are all a society, and people with autism and other neurodivergencies are really valuable and strong members of that society and that community and should be treated as such.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, just looking back on my own history of life and history of talking to you, I've changed, right? As I can see that I have changed. In my office the other day, a family walked in. It was a father and a son and another father and another son. And it became apparent that one of those children was definitely, can we say on the spectrum? Is that fair to say? Can we say that?
The vernacular has also changed a lot. So some people prefer autistic peer person. Some people still prefer person with autism, autism spectrum. So I think what we say is you're going to hear us use terms interchangeably because it's impossible to choose one at this point. And we're trying to be as inclusive as possible.
Well, me too.
Yeah. Gotcha.
I became aware that that one son was different in the way he perceived what was happening around him. And I was able to meet that without any fear, without any apprehension. And I felt the gratitude from the dad. Like,
that's awesome.
He's safe with this woman. And like I learned a new skill, like to be able to practice that and receive someone and enjoy their company. And all of that.
That's great, Casey. I'm so happy to hear that.
It's happened in my life and I'm sure in everyone else's too, where we would see somebody in the Home Depot or whatever, and we wouldn't know where to look or what to say or how to respond. And now we're treating humans like humans.
Yeah, how about that? And I think, you know, from my perspective, what it takes is just letting go of the what's supposed to be, what things are supposed to look like, eye contact, shaking a hand, tone of voice, and letting go of some of that and just being in the moment to say, what does this person really need right now? And that comes down to just general kindness and understanding. So I'm so happy to hear that and that you are able to sort of step out of yourself in that moment and realize that something was happening. That's really what this awareness and acceptance campaigns are all about, is being able to take a moment and say, I don't have to ask this person to leave. I don't have to worry if this person's going to like touch the equipment and not be able to sort of back off of it or that I'm not going to, you know, am I going to say something that I regret later or that is offensive? And you just found a way to just be yourself, which most people are going to respond well to. And I will say, even if the dad didn't say anything directly to you, if you felt that from him, parents feel isolated so much of the time and nervous about bringing their autistic loved one into any sort of public setting in many cases. And so I would think that probably you touched him more than you even realize.
And I felt grateful that he was in the room because it was a two-pronged exercise. I was very conscious of saying, what's the best thing I can do for this child right now? And what's the best thing I can do for this dad? And I knew the best thing I could do for the dad was to be open and smile and accepting. You know what I mean? Like, of course you saw.
I totally do. I hear about it all the time. Because it's that father may have had experiences where a similar situation occurred and he was asked to leave.
Yeah.
A store or a park or, you know, maybe got a call from the school saying it's time to pick up your son, something like that. I mean, you're hitting the nail on the head. It really is the difference of, she's got this. She's cool with it. And so I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely thrilled. If we had a little part in helping you get there, Anderson is, you know, that's one of the things that we want to do is, you know, through our training, our consulting, our programs and being able to come on and talk to you and talk to others through the radio and the podcast. Like that's what we're all about, is helping people see that you can do it. We can all do it.
Thank you, Anderson Center and Eliza Bozinski.
Do not take all the credit, Casey. A lot of that is you.
Take some
That's
of
great.
It. Why did the numbers change?
So recently, very recently, last week, the CDC came out with the new statistics from their longitudinal study. That's not a word that rolls off the tongue. So we have just jumped from 1 in 36 children in the United States being diagnosed on the autism spectrum to 1 in 31. That is a movement in the same direction we've been seeing for many, 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 many years. At one point, it was 1 in 10,000. It was 1 in 110. It was 1 in 88, 1 in 56, 1 in 36. I may have missed a few along the way, but it's been changing. Look, everybody is entitled to sort of, you know, you can read the study, you can look it up. It's very easy to Google and find how they come up with those numbers. Many years ago on the podcast I do for Anderson, I was able to interview one of the scientists who works on that study. So that was a really interesting interview where he explained in a little bit more detail how they gather that data. But remember, this is U.S. children. I think the you know, they typically look at like 7 or 8 year olds. And the thing that I have pointed to for many years and continue to point to is that I think the main reason why that number continues to change is mostly because of awareness. As the stigma has been reducing, which is great for families and for individuals, it's still there, but because it's been getting better, I think more families are asking for help and identifying some markers in their children earlier, maybe going to the doctor earlier. Doctors are thereby seeing children at younger ages coming through and with parents asking questions as opposed to sort of, I'm not, you know, there. And at the same time, medical schools and medical doctor's offices are equipping their doctors with tools, technologies, assessments that are getting better and better and better at identifying markers earlier and earlier and earlier. And the key there is, you know, this really hasn't changed. Early intervention with young children who have autism or maybe have a diagnosis like a, you know, maybe something a little bit more general, but maybe some autistic traits has been shown repeatedly to have a really positive impact. So I think all of those things combined, parents seeing things earlier, recognizing maybe this is something we should check out, doctors having better tools, feeling more confident about making a diagnosis or at least sort of helping the family know what to advocate for in a preschool, in an early intervention program, in a school setting, and then schools also having more resources. Right. It's the benefit is to me is that more children are probably being helped earlier, and that often leads to better outcomes for those children. Societally, it's also interesting because I think for people, and you've also probably seen this in your own life too, we have said for years, you know, if you think you don't know somebody with autism, you're wrong. Obviously, with those numbers, they're, you know, we're all neighbors, we're going to school together, we're working together. But the fact that you can now point to 1 in 31 just makes it so when you're in a room of 50 people, it's much more concrete. Right. And I would like to think that we can look at that as, you know, it's always good to look at the research and see what's being studied and what's going on in terms of whether there are other factors. I'm not saying there may not be others, but recognizing that, that we are really a very close community and it's not a, you know, group over here and a group over there, is important, I think, for people to change, to shift their thinking and the way they approach people in general.
Can you tell everybody where the Anderson Center is and what happens there?
Sure. Anderson Center for Autism is in Statsburg. Our main campus is in Statsburg, New York, right on Route 9, in between Hyde Park and Rhinebeck. We have over 100 acres, beautiful acres, in our children's residential campus, which is what's located there, and our administrative buildings. It's our main campus. We are 101 years old this year. We've been on that campus since 1926 or so. The Anderson School, which it used to be called, was actually started by our founder in New Jersey in Shrewsbury. But he soon after bought that property and we have remained there ever since. We're on that campus. We have 138 students who are residential students. They live with us. We're open 24/7, 365. They have school during the day and then, you know, residential life after school on weekends, et cetera. Very family friendly. We want families to come visit. Some students go home quite frequently for weekends and other breaks. But we also now have 3 early learning academy programs, otherwise known as preschools, one up in Latham, New York, one in Pine Plains, and one in Saugerties. So we've been able to start supporting younger kids, which is something we wanted to do for a long time. So we're there. We also have a large adult services program, which is community-based. So we run about 24, 25 group homes throughout Ulster, Dutchess, and Orange counties. And they serve about typically five adults each. And then we have three or four lifelong learning centers throughout Dutchess and Ulster County, which are sort of the day program hubs for the adults. Although we have a lot of adults who spend most of their days out in the community, delivering Meals on Wheels, interacting with senior citizens, doing other volunteer work. For a lot of different programs. And you can actually, if you follow us on social media, we recently launched the Anderson Heroes campaign, which highlights some of those adults who are demonstrating that they love helping others, not just being the recipients of other people's, you know, charitable support. And so you can read more about what they're doing and how much they enjoy that in the community as well.
That's amazing because, you know, I believe that when you are in a service mode, you know, you are your best self. And that is for any human being on the planet, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's a person with autism or not. So you serve all ages. Now I just had a thought about what happens to autistic people when they become senior citizens.
We are looking at that right now. Our oldest adults that we serve are pretty much, I would say, in their 50s, maybe getting close to their later 50s. There are some studies that show that people with autism, it's not that they age faster, but their body sort of can feel the effects of age earlier sometimes than neurotypical peers. So we are seeing some of that, but then there's also just your general, you know, individual health is different. Mm-hmm. That is just as there's a gap when children graduate from their more structured high school programs typically and are looking for an adult placement. There's a gap there now and has been for a long time. There's also a gap when it comes to if an individual needs more medical support than what we can offer, because we're not really a medical facility. We have houses that are designed to be that adult's sort of forever home. That's what we want. We want them to be able to age in place. However, just like anyone else, if you develop, you know, blindness or serious mobility issues, things like that, there's a need to look for a different type of support. There are some programs, not enough, as always, but there are some programs that are designed to serve both behaviorally complex, non-vocal, autistic adults who also are developing those medical concerns. But like I just said, there's not enough of them. So we don't offer that service, but what we do is we work with those providers and with the family to see what we can do as much as we can do for the longest period of time, right, until somebody might have to move into a rehab center or a nursing home. I failed to mention that we also have a very successful consulting and training program called Anderson Consulting and Training, otherwise known as ACT. They are available to work with any type of business and school district, and also places like rehab centers, nursing homes, hospitals, to train those staff on how to work with the individuals that we serve. So we are looking for ways that we're not really equipped to provide that direct medical care, but we are equipped to help people who are in organizations who do provide that care be able to provide it to the people we serve, which is a very specific population. We do the same with dental providers, emergency room staff, first responders. So that's where we see our biggest impact there.
Absolutely. All right. Good to know. And the residential school serves what age?
We are certified to serve as young as 5. We really don't see students referred to us that young. Typically, we're going to start around 7 or 8, which is after that student has usually had a couple of years of a less restrictive environment in their home school district. So that's usually the youngest that we see, all the way up to 21/22, because that's also been changing. School state education departments across New York State and also in other states have been extending graduation age from 21 to 22. So there's a mix there. And then, like I said before, there's a big gap where students graduate and their adult placements aren't ready, or again, there aren't enough of them. So we have a significant number of adults who remain on our campus, which is not something that we think is great for them. They know they're adults. They know they've graduated. They walked in graduation in their cap and gown, and they're ready for an adult life. But that's, again, a major gap that exists just in the whole field right now. So they remain on campus till their adult program is ready.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to ask a question about the globe.
Sure.
Are there different rates of autism in different countries, or is it all about the tracking and the testing?
That's a great question. And I can probably answer it partially, but I don't have all the info. From what I read, there are different rates. And then some countries probably may not be tracking it at all because they may not have the resources. But autism crosses all races, ethnicities, socioeconomic barriers. I mean, it's not something that, you know, exists someplace and doesn't exist anywhere else. At least I've never heard of a place where it doesn't exist at all. But I think that depending on the resources of that country and the focus areas, you're going to see similar tracking to the CDC here in the U.S. And you might see less so somewhere else. It really depends. But it's an interesting thing to look at because you will see different rates. Overwhelmingly, we do typically see a higher rate in boys than girls. Although, again, there's all these questions about, is there a biological reason for that or a physiological reason for that? Or what we've heard a lot about more recently, there's been a lot of studies and also presentations by really, you know, wonderfully intelligent and informed people and autistic people themselves, that girls typically are known to mask more than boys, meaning girls often self-report or their families and peers report that they sort of find ways to cover it in social situations and kind of get by, whereas boys are more maybe obvious about it or are not masking. I don't want to guess as to why. It's not an area that I've studied very much about. However, it's possible that that could also impact those numbers because there may actually be a lot more girls who are autistic but have not received a diagnosis.
Right. Wow. Wonderful. Your information is wonderful. I wish there was an Anderson Center in every neighborhood. I adore what you're doing.
And thank you.
And we all can participate, whether we know someone who is an autistic person or not. We can all participate in supporting the Anderson Center because you guys have a lot of fun things coming up.
We do. It's actually really a great place to work. I mean, every time I give a tour, which is probably one of my favorite things to do, I am reminded about how joyful it is there. And everybody who comes for a tour who's never been before is sort of stunned. You know, they go into a classroom and they see the teachers truly enjoying what they're doing with the students and the students having a great time. And then, you know, if they're lucky enough to be on a tour when the kids are getting out of school and walking back to their residences, it feels like kids coming out of college classes and going back to their dorms and they're shooting hoops, especially this time of year. I mean, it's beautiful. And in adult services too, again, you know, check out those heroes because they're telling you themselves, this makes me feel good because, you know, and it's amazing. So I think there's a few things. First of all, we're always looking for dedicated people to come and join our team. So if you're interested in working at Anderson, we have lots of information up on our website, which is AndersonCenterForAutism.org. And we're also advertising in sort of your typical places. We have job fairs and go to job fairs and try to make it as easy as possible for people to learn about the positions. But we'd love to have you join us if you're interested. We also have a golf outing coming up in June. On June 12th, we have our Anderson Golf Classic. It's our annual golf outing. It is always sold out. It is great fun. We have vendor holes, lots of them, lots of fun things to try and learn about and eat and drink. And we do it at the Links at Unionvale. Lots of sponsorship opportunities. If you don't play, you can just come eat with us and have a great time and support us that way. And if you're a business owner, you can sponsor. And we really appreciate seeing some new names and some new faces at that event. So more information, again, on our website for that. On November 1st, we will be having our annual gala in Poughkeepsie at the Grandview. We've been doing that for many years. It's a wonderful evening of just recognizing not just our honorees, who this year are actually the chair of our foundation board, Kevin Kohler and his wife, Katie, who are wonderful advocates for Anderson and parents and just an absolutely stellar family who we appreciate very much. But we also spend time that night honoring staff and surprising some people with some really cool things and raising money for our foundation. We have a New York City event coming up. This is our third annual New York City Signature Reception at the Harvard Club. That is going to be on September 18th, I believe, honoring a very cool company this year called Spectrum Designs. They are a company out of Long Island that actually employ, they do like embroidery and screen printing. So we get a lot of our swag from them, but they employ people with autism. And I've been to their location and they offer tours. That is phenomenal. They are like, talk about aligned with our mission, and they're just absolutely wonderful people. So we're really excited to honor them this year at the New York City reception. And just to mention, all of these are fundraisers for the foundation. Our Anderson Center or Anderson Foundation for Autism is, we exist to support Anderson Center for Autism and the unfunded and underfunded things that we do to make Anderson Center be able to fulfill our mission, which is to optimize the quality of life for people with autism. We also now do that very recently by way of giving out small grants to organizations who are also aligned with that mission. It's a very small part of the money we raise, but in that way, we are trying to broaden the impact of our own mission by way of noticing when other organizations are doing the same type of work. So by giving to Anderson, you're really directly helping us fulfill our mission, and we appreciate anything anyone can do. And we also, like you said, we tend to have great fun at our events. We want people to know exactly who they're supporting and why they're doing it. We involve our families very much, and they do an amazing job. Our Anderson family partners are incredibly engaged, and they will, like I do, talk your ear off in a positive way about what your support means to them as a parent of a child at Anderson. So I encourage you to come for a tour, check us out, come to an event, get in touch with me, and I'll just keep talking about all the great things going on at Anderson.
Spectrum Designs.
Yeah.
I'm going to look into that. They're going to look into
that. Yes, you definitely should. They're very, very cool. And I was introduced to them by a family years ago when I went for a tour, and I was blown away. And then they came and toured Anderson and they were sort of blown away. And now you see Anderson swag all over because our staff buy it, our families buy it. We wear it all the time, and they make a lot of it. And it's just awesome knowing that many adults who are so affected by autism, but, really engaged with their community, are employed and by this wonderful company that believes in them and is growing also. So it's just awesome.
Awesome. All right. Eliza Bozinski, Anderson Center for Autism. We appreciate you so much. I always like to wrap up with a thought for the day. And today it's a quote from Temple Grandin, who said, "Different, not less."
Love it. Thank you, Casey.